join the conversation. Does that work?
That was good.
I think that would be fine, Madam Chair.
All right. So good morning, everybody. The time is 7:31. My name is Tamara Shreve. I'm the chair for the Arizona Board of Psychological Examiners. Today is March 31st, 2020 at 7:31, and we are going to start our board meeting. First on the agenda is a roll call. Ms. Poe?
Yes, Madam Chair. Ms. Shreve?
Present.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Flowers?
Present.
Dr. Bohansky? Dr. Davey?
Present.
Mr. Dinar? Dr. Gill?
Present.
Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Dr. Malott?
Present.
We have a quorum.
And I believe somebody just joined. Did someone from the board member just join?
No, just listening.
Guess not. All right, thank you. All right, well, thank you. I'm glad everyone could make the meeting today. The reason we are here is, of course, we are in a very unique situation. Our governor's put an emergency, order, or a state of emergency for the state because of this virus, and they have asked us to look at our statutes and rules and see if there's potentially any opportunity to, for a short amount of time, for whatever we need it for, to make it maybe a little easier for people to be able to provide psychological services to those in need in our state. And so our executive director has put together a great list. You'll see that on the agenda. What I'd like to do is go through each one, have a discussion, see what the board feels comfortable, if anything, in modifying any of our current rules or statutes for a short amount of time that would allow, residents to get services from psychologists. So, Executive Director, I'm going to, if you want to open up item number 3, discussion, consideration, and possible action concerning waiver or requirements for psychological licensures under the authority of the Arizona Department of Health Services, ARS 36787, Public Health Authority during a state of emergency, which is what we're in, to include but not limited to. Go ahead.
Certainly, Madam Chair. So the next series of agenda items relate to the order issued by the Department of Health Services. As Ms. Shreve explained, the director of DHS invoked the statutory authority at 36-787 to direct healthcare professional regulatory boards to identify any professional licensure requirements under their authority for which a temporary waiver is necessary to adequately address the current state of emergency, provide a justification for temporarily waiving those requirements, and establish requirements for registering providers with out-of-state licenses will be permitted to provide services in Arizona under their out-of-state licenses. We are to inform DHS and the governor's office of our intentions to do any of the actions that the board chooses to adopt today, and essentially wait for their approval to move forward with the implementation. So item number 3 is specific to psychologist licensure requirements. Staff reviewed all of the statutes and rules and identified all the requirements that we think this board might consider. And they're listed beneath agenda item number 3. Really, A and B, I see those as essentially, they're somewhat similar. A refers to the exemption from licensure, the 20-day provision. It's listed here if the board is interested in attempting to extend that 20-day period. And then B relates to the statute that we have discussed somewhat recently that permits a board to establish temporary licensure opportunities. I do want to, and I don't have firsthand knowledge, this is probably something that Ms. Galvin could weigh in. Other boards apparently have attempted to expand their licensure exemptions to a longer period of time, and that has not been palatable to DHS. So I'm going to suggest that we look at both of these actions, but potentially put more consideration into the temporary licensure opportunity.
And I think if we do look at the temporary license opportunity, we could then start or implement a registry where of psychologists where we've given them a temporary license. So we would be tracking that. Is that we would right? Is that they would have to apply as a temporary, and then we would track that. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's correct.
Any comments or thoughts from the board?
Madam Chair,
this is Dr. Flowers. Okay, wait a second, Dr. Flowers, and then Dr. Malott.
Yes, I'm wondering, obviously we already have a temporary license procedure, but mainly geared for those that have not completed their hours on their postdoc. This sounds as if it would be separate, and so that would be kind of precarious. But I'm wondering, too, currently we have the 20-day provision where people with licensures in other jurisdictions can go up to 20 days. It would seem simpler if, you know, board members agreed and maybe DHS agreed, or to just extend that time for the duration of the emergency. Those are some comments.
Great. Now, I appreciate Dr. Flowers. Dr. Malott?
Yeah, I think I'm along the same lines as Dr. Flowers. Rather than create a registry and just create additional burden and developing forms, and, you know, that is a lot of extra work for both staff, and I believe then it would come to the ARC committee to review. We meet once a month, and this needs to move more rapidly. Or maybe board staff could, you know. Anyway, but I would just be in favor of extending it to, like, 30 days. And if, remember, it's 30 work days. It's not, or did we change it? I don't know in the statute.
Well, it's a day is equal. Yeah, a day is equal to 80 hours, so it's basically 160 hours a year. But you got to remember, I think if we extend it, it would be for the duration of the emergency. And then once because at some point the governor will lift the emergency, and Ms. Galvin, jump in if I'm incorrect here. And once the emergency is lifted, then it would go back to normal. But whatever decisions I think we make would be for the duration of the emergency declaration.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
So hopefully,
go ahead.
Yes, it's nothing.
I have experience with one other board, and I just want to alert the psychology board about this concern. If you seek approval from DHS to increase the length of time that someone can come in and practice without a license from 20 to 30 days or from 20 for the duration of the emergency, DHS may not consider that a waiver of licensure requirements. My experience with another agency is that they're reading the executive order or interpreting the executive order fairly narrowly to waive licensure requirements. And I don't know how this could be interpreted. It may be interpreted as a waiving of licensure requirements, but just simply extending the time that someone can come in and practice without a license, I think it's worth asking. I'm not sure that it'll be approved, but it could be. I just wanted you to be aware of that and maybe have a plan B.
Well, it could depend. Wait, for a plan
can
B,
I ask Ms. Galvin a follow-up question?
Yes, Dr. Malott.
Yeah, I was just wondering, what does what is the difference, in your opinion, between the exemption and the waiver? That's what I'm a little...
So your exemption in statute says someone who's licensed out of state can practice here up to 20 days without being licensed here. The executive order allows agencies, with the permission of DHS, essentially, to waive licensing requirements. You have a number of licensing requirements, whether it's postdocs or internships or pre-internships or fees or supervision. Those are requirements you need to get licensed. The executive order says that boards may have requirements for licensure waived to ease the licensing burden and allow individuals to come into the state to practice to address the state of emergency.
So, Mr. Alvin, I thought that would be addressed in the lower, I thought we were just talking about A for right now. I get what you're saying in terms of the temporary license. I thought that was going to be a different item.
Well, I think what Ms. Galvin's saying is potentially is maybe A isn't something we deal with. We don't extend it. We go to B, and we provide a temporary license, and we waive that they have to come to the board if Kathy or the board staff can determine that they're licensed in another state in good standing. Then they would receive a temporary license with
that's not my understanding. It's like when you're waiving postdocs or waiving the exam. These are people who don't have a license. So to me, I see those two separate issues. We have to deal with people who don't have a license but still have requirements to meet, which are difficult in this time period, and we need to come up with a plan for them, and there's the exemption.
Dr. Myers.
So it's already in our code for the extension that a person may exceed the 20-day limit requirement to assist in public service that is related to a disaster as acknowledged by the board. So as long as my understanding is, as long as we acknowledge, as long as the board acknowledges this as a disaster, then we can extend that 20-day limit for people that are licensed in other states.
I think the concern was the governor hasn't declared this as a disaster, which is different than a state of emergency. Maybe, Ms. Galvin, can you clarify that? That was my understanding.
Right. What we have currently is a declared state of emergency and not a declaration of a disaster. And the statute reads as a declaration of a disaster or under a disaster, and I wouldn't want to confuse the two different government actions, a disaster or a state of emergency. I don't know if it was incomplete drafting when it talked about just a disaster and not to include a state of emergency, but they are treated differently.
Even though it just says as acknowledged by the board, that
I think we could only acknowledge what the state, whatever the state's under, the umbrella we're under is the state, and so they're only acknowledging the state of emergency. I'm sure disaster is defined somewhere, in a statute somewhere, but right now we're just under a state of emergency. So is the go ahead, Dr. Myers.
This doesn't say anything about a declaration from the governor or permission from HHS or anything else. It just says if the board acknowledges it, then we can extend it. Is that not correct, Ms. Galvin?
I have to conclude that the use of the word disaster in that statute has some meaning under principles of statutory construction, and there are other statutes throughout the Arizona framework of statutes that refer to disasters versus states of emergency.
And I would be actually hesitant to say that to declare it a disaster, because I think that's taking a very strong stance in the situation. I think we're in an emergency, but I think we want to be careful that we're not trying to, I see what you're saying. I mean, we're trying to find a way to make it work, but I think it could be perceived as more, I don't know, like, not, it is serious, but in a, I just don't want to jump our what our authority is. But, and given what Ms. Galvin said, I think what we need to do is focus on what we have and what do we as a board want to do in regards to temporarily amend any of these. So on the extension for 20 days, how does everybody feel about if we were to extend that through the state of emergency?
Madam Chair, this is Heidi. Can I jump in with a suggestion?
Please.
So knowing that the option identified in A may or may not be approved by DHS, that is still, we acknowledge that as the path of least resistance, the easiest thing to implement. So perhaps we could move forward with that and have B as our plan B, as our backup plan. As Dr. Malott, effectively stated, implementing B is a lot more work, but maybe we can try A and fall back to B if A isn't accepted.
Okay, Madam Chair, Kathy? Yes, Kathy.
May I offer, along with what Heidi's saying, with deference to Dr. Malott and the requirements for a license for someone who is not past the ECCC and not licensed in another state, I would think that we aren't talking about that group in this particular area. The group we're talking about is anyone who would qualify for a waiver or universal recognition or credential licensure who's already licensed in another state. The DHS order that we received, Emergency Measures Administrative Order 2020-01, it says under, now therefore I, Kara Christ, and the, under number one, she says that the board is to identify any professional licensure requirement under its regulatory authority for which a temporary waiver is necessary, and provide a justification for temporarily waiving those requirements, establish requirements for registering providers with out-of-state licenses who will be permitted to provide services in Arizona under their out-of-state licenses. And as the licensing specialist, I am very familiar with our forms, and this would actually be really easy to implement. It would be a simple revision of one of the forms. It's a single pager, and it is very simple to determine if someone has an out-of-state license in good standing, because every board has an online license lookup, and I can do that in 5 minutes. It doesn't take long at all, and I have a lot of experience with doing that. I have them all hyperlinked, so I can get to them very quickly. And it would really be very simple to have that one-page form prove that they have an out-of-state license and then waive all the other requirements, because that's practically what we're doing with universal recognition anyway. It would just be removing the residence requirement. And that's
right.
My suggestion.
And Kathy, I appreciate that. And Dr. Malott, if you look at the statute, that there's a link to it on the agenda. This is specifically for people that already hold a license in another state. The statute basically says that, it's being good standing. Statute allows for only a 30 days.
I just said there are two separate issues. One is people already licensed.
Right.
We can be mixing up the two, which I thought we were doing.
Okay, so in regards to B, is anyone opposed to or have concerns with allowing us to do a temporary license, Kathy could easily change the form based on what she said. We would have a registry placed on our website of those receiving it. We would grant the temporary license for the duration of the state of emergency. So if it goes over 30 days, which was only the statute allows now, they can hold that until the emergency has been lifted. Is there any concerns with that? Okay, do we need a vote on these?
No, I have no concerns.
Okay. Ms. Galvin, do we need a vote on these individually or how?
Please.
Okay. So is there a motion then to allow the temporary license process pursuant to ARS 32-3124 to be used for the state of emergency for more than 30 days so they follow the current statute as far as being able to be able to apply? They already have to be licensed in another state in good standing, and it would be for the duration of the state of emergency.
Dr. Bob, so moved.
Okay, is there a second?
Seconded.
All right, who was that? Dr. Meyer, thank you, Dr. Meyer. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
And
aye.
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 Any opposed?
Dr.
Flowers.
We're voting on both issues or just one?
We're voting on B right now. I skipped A. I'll go back.
B. Okay. I on the one, yes, I will also join everybody in saying aye.
Okay. So so all in favor? Is that yes? Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Going back to A, do we need to deal with A if we're going to allow for those that are out of state to practice in Arizona for more than 20 days? Wouldn't they just then go ahead with the temporary license process?
Please, Dr. Meyer.
Any thoughts on Dr. Meyer?
So we've had to move, ASU clinic has moved completely to telepsychology services, and for a lot of our students that are from out of state and have moved back to other states, this has been an issue that it's difficult. We have to look at what are the requirements and what are the processes to get licensed in each state that we have a student that's now residing. And so I was very interested in the A option to extend that for people that are licensed in other states to make telepsychology much easier if they have clients that have temporarily come back to Arizona. So I think that in facilitating care, continuity of care, if we could extend that for people that are already licensed and already working with clients that are now residing in Arizona, that'd be very beneficial.
Okay. Does anyone have any concerns with doing that, knowing that, you know, maybe the health Department of Health may or may not accept it, but is there any concerns with extending that to the state of emergency? Okay, then is there a motion, Dr. Myers?
I would move that we extend the exception for licensure to continue to the period of, or to the end of the state of emergency.
Is there a second?
That's a set forth in 32-2075, correct?
That's
32-2075, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin. Is there a second?
Second.
Dr. Malott, thank you. All right, any discussion?
This is specifically telemedicine.
This is specifically for, well, typically it is telemedicine because they're coming, you know, I would think, because it's a 20-day license, the way it's written.
It doesn't specify the telepsychology.
It does not. This simply would allow someone who is not licensed here
to come in and practice for the length of the time of the declared state of emergency without benefit of a license. This is different than obtaining temporary license.
But they have to be licensed in another state.
Okay, and a good state.
Correct.
Okay, so it's the first issue right. We talked about.
It's in essence the same thing as B, except we're not making them put in a registration form.
Okay.
You still have to meet those requirements.
Okay, and I guess.
But B only.
B would be the actual temporary licensure then.
Ms. Galvin, did you want to say something?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So I believe we had a motion and a second.
Dr. Dave, we have a question with regard to the language of the extension throughout the state of emergency. Given that we have the process that we just voted on B for the temporary license to be streamlined, my question is, does the extension need to be pushed out to maybe be a 40-day exemption to allow for that second process to happen, or does it need to be indefinite through the quote-unquote state of emergency?
I think we have to, this Dr. Meyer.
Hey, Dr. Meyer.
So, are we waiving, I guess we didn't discuss this, are we waiving fees for temporary licensure for option B? Because I think that's an extra burden to, if somebody's licensed in another state and we want to let them temporarily practice here, it's a lot easier if we just extend that exemption as long as they're licensed in another state. Are we going to charge for the process of obtaining the temporary license?
It does say that we have to charge applicable fees.
Right. I think we have an executive director, if you want to give us some thoughts here. I do believe we have the authority to waive the fees during the state of emergency. Our fund is, you know, pretty solid at this point, so there's not a big concern in regards to the lack of fees. Executive Director, thoughts on that?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would concur. I have no concerns whatsoever. If the board were to elect to waive all of the fees, potential fees incurred with any of these decisions, the board fund would be fine. So really that policy decision is up to the board.
Again, and the fees would just be waived during the state of emergency. So are we interested then in waiving the fees on the temporary license, this going back to B? And I don't believe there is a fee on the 20-day licensure exemption.
No, Dr. Bob. Only point where it's really easy if we could extend the practice, and that's the least amount of hassle. So that was my motion, is to extend the option to practice from outside the state without a license temporarily, past the 20-day exemption.
Dr. Bob?
I think if we're just adding the state of emergency to the concept of disaster, and we already have, in addition to that, a law that allows somebody to practice here from out of state with another license for 20 days, and there's no fees associated with it, then I don't think we need to even take up the concept of fees. We're simply granting permission.
All right, on item A. So is it the board's... Do you feel comfortable then in extending the 20-day licensure exemption to extend it throughout the state of emergency? We don't know how long that's going to be.
It makes no sense to do anything but have it paired with the duration of the state of emergency.
All right. So, Dr. Bob, do you have a motion? we can move along.
You think you've got one on the table already, don't you?
I already made that motion to extend it throughout the state of emergency duration.
Okay. And did Dr. Bob, did you second that?
Did
someone second it?
I second it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Malott. All right, so we have a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Hearing, any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Do we need to just take up item B quickly and just make a motion to waive those fees, or can we just make a motion to waive the fees during this emergency situation?
I'd like to actually have a broader motion. I'd like to say that we waive the fees and that we give board authority, board staff the authority to verify the license and proceed so they don't have to call a meeting so we can move quickly.
You would be delegating that to the executive director?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Okay. All right.
The motion would be to delegate to the executive director the authority to grant temporary licenses and not to establish a fee in relation to those temporary licenses.
Dr. Malott, is that your motion?
Yes, that's my motion. Thank you, Dr.
Okay. And is there, Dr. Bob, did you second that?
Yes, I did.
All right. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, item motion is goes forward. Item C, extension of temporary license. Executive Director?
Yes, Madam Chair. This agenda item is specific to those individuals who, under 3220-73, have been granted a temporary license. The temporary license may expire without the applicant having the opportunity to meet the requirements of passing the examination. Ms. Folks is tracking the status of applicants who may be impacted. So having the ability to extend the period of temporary licensure to grant those individuals more time, just time to fulfill the requirements would be ideal, and perhaps that's something you would consider delegating to your executive director.
Thank you. Thank you. Any comments?
I just wondered,
Dr. Bob, Chair.
The Dr. Flowers and then Dr. Bob?
Yes, I'm just wondering if some kind of stipulation about the end of that extension related to the emergency rather than just indefinite.
Yeah, it would be until the end of the emergency, until the emergency is lifted.
I think we need to go beyond that, because if a person is not able to practice, say they're getting postdoc hours, and so if the emergency started on March 23rd, say, and it goes to August 1st, they haven't had any time. And so if their license, so basically they get the same amount of time, beyond the emergency, because they would need to recover from these 4 months or 5 months or 2 months. So something, the equal amount of time beyond the emergency, so then they have that time to meet those requirements. So it's not just till the end of the emergency.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. So is there a motion or any further discussion?
Dr. Bob is still wanting to say something.
Sorry, Dr. Bob, go ahead.
You have a couple issues here. One is you do have postdocs whose hours could be affected, an inability to serve clients because of the shutdowns of programs, as Dr. Malott notes. You also have the shutdown of the testing service, and the inability to schedule, and out of our control is how quickly that's going to come up and operate. So I think it's reasonable to have a sufficient time following the end of the emergency for folks to either make up those hours and or be able to schedule and take the examination. And I think that period of time might not be indefinite, but it should probably be at least 6 months.
All right, thank you. Any other comments?
So I'd like to make the motion.
Please, Dr. Malott.
Yeah, so that we extend the temporary license at least 6 months beyond the period when the emergency is lifted, a minimum of 6 months, you know, because if the emergency say 6 months, we just don't know, then it might need to be longer, but at least 6 months beyond the period of emergency, because most people are ending whatever they started, hopefully. So, the other thing that we have to be, we have certain statutes that says you cannot have this status for more than 36 months or more than 24 months. So people are running into those considerations. I wanted to put this in that motion, too, that we don't let those stipulations hurt somebody. Dr. Bob, maybe you can help me.
Madam Chair, this is Kathy.
The issue comes down to the fact that we have a two-year limit on the temporary license. And someone who's gotten a temporary license and is near the end of that two-year period, and the state finds itself in emergency or disaster, and their license is about to expire, they couldn't get an exam date to schedule, their client load has disappeared, you have a variety of things that could have happened. What we're really doing is saying that they can extend that temporary license, and then the question is for how long. A minimum of 6 months and renewable, or a minimum of a year. It could take these folks time to actually get back to the state and the practice to get up and running. It could take time, and none of us know this, for how long it's going to be for the testing centers to come back online and what kind of a backlog is there. What we're really doing is saying that we're going to allow temporary licenses, which would expire in 2 years, to be extended for up to blank, and I think that would cover all those situations.
Madam Chair, this is Kathy.
Kathy,
I just need to interject. The temporary license is good for 3 years, so the board may wish to consider a year and a half extension for all, because even those that are going to expire, you know, that were just issued, are still going to run into the same problems and are still going to be delayed in their ability to complete the post-op.
Thank you, Kathy. What's everyone's thoughts on a year and a half? And again, we could always revisit this, I think, down the road if we needed to, if things went, you know, a lot longer than we all, hopefully it doesn't, you know, than we think. So does everybody feel comfortable with a year and a half? Any concerns with a year and a half?
It sounds good. I like the fact that there's a defined upper limit rather than indefinite. And like you said, we can revisit this if needed.
Okay. And so is there a motion, Dr. I think, Dr. Malott, did you make a motion?
I made the motion. We just add the year and a half to it. So that gives people time to meet all of those requirements. Mm-hmm.
All right. So an extension of temporary license up to a year and a half. And is there a second?
Dr. Bob,
thank you.
Just for clarification, this is a temporary license issued under 32-2073.
Yes, thank you for that. All right, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Next item deals with fees and or continuing education waivers for reactivating retired status licenses. So those that are already maybe retired want to come back and help. We would then potentially waive the fees as well as continuing education credits and allow them to practice during this state of emergency. Are there any discussion regarding this? Any concerns?
I think to keep track of all of the people who do plan to do that, we could ask them to apply for the temporary license. You know, they would also be eligible to apply for the temporary license if they were licensed in the state of Arizona, because that already comes with the waive fee. So we could maintain that registry, so to speak.
Kathy, is that doable?
Yes, it is.
All right. Any other things? That's a good idea. We want to keep track of who's practicing. Any other comments or thoughts, or is there a motion?
In order to apply for a temporary license, you have to be licensed, hold another active license in another jurisdiction. Someone who's retired no longer holds, at least doesn't hold an Arizona license. If you're going to make them apply for temporary, they have to have another license somewhere. So that may not work.
Sorry. Yeah, that's right. So you're right, Dr. Thanks, Ms. Galvin. So they would need to just, is there a process where if you want to then, if you're retired and you want to come back in, they would need to just notify us, correct?
They could do the reapplication that we have.
Well, then you may have some individuals who wouldn't qualify under reapplication.
Dr. Bob. If we're talking now about prior Arizona licensees, so these are people who had been through our process, have worked their career, are now enjoying the sunshine and the golf course. And in a state of emergency, as we've seen with our medical colleagues in other states, they are being mustered up, much like the National Reserve, to be available to assist the public. So I see this as quite different than the existing things we voted on as temporary licensing so far. What we really should be calling this, even something different, is this is a temporary reactivation of their prior Arizona license for the duration of the disaster / state of emergency, and then for some thereafter, or continuity of care.
I like that, temporary reactivation of prior agent license. And we could easily just do like a form where they just let us know they're reactivating, and we would just determine that they were in good standing before they retired.
Yeah. Yes, I'd want to make sure it wasn't somebody we took their license away. That it's someone who has actually just retired.
Right. So, Kathy, is that something we could easily do? Just with some easy form process where they just, hey, they're going to reactivate, they're letting us know, we check, make sure they're in good standing, and then we put them on the reactivation list for retired.
Definitely. I think that would be very easy. Krishna may be able to weigh in much better with this because she handles the reactivations and retires and inactive statuses, and she'll be able to give direction to staff on how best to do this, but it could also be kept in the same registry, just given the status of reactivated or, you know, whatever it needs to be. But we can just give it a different status than those who are out of state.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes, Dr. Flowers.
I'm wondering, too, I know when your license is not renewed, it expires, but there are certain stipulations where after a certain date you got to totally apply again because it's been too long. So I'm wondering if some of that will apply on this or if that would also be waived. Let's just say, for example, they've not renewed their license or paid fees, whatever, for 4 years. I mean, that's far beyond the thing to just pay the penalty and reactivate. Will they also at least temporarily be allowed to come back in spite of the duration of time?
Madam Chair, Dr. Bob.
Dr. Bob.
There's a good point being raised by Dr. Flowers here. Someone who hasn't practiced and hasn't maintained continuing education because they're not practicing and maybe out of touch with the practice. We've been concerned about people who've been out and inactive, raising a family or other such things, and made them, before we'd reactivate them, obtain continuing education. I don't think that's appropriate here, but we might want to set a limit that if you have been retired your license within the past, in academia they generally say 10 years is a relevant period in terms of using a reference or quoting the knowledge of the field, that if you've retired within the past 10 years, we will let you reactivate that license for the duration of the state of emergency, plus an appropriate lag time, and create ourselves a Arizona Psychologists Reserve Force.
How does everybody feel about the 10-year limit? All right, so is there...
Dr. Gill, Madam Chair?
Dr. Gill.
The other concern, along with what Dr. B is saying, is that there's also the issue of competence, not competence with respect to their skills as a psychologist, but just general medical competence. If it's a retirement age, you're going to have some of these people are not going to be fully functioning cognitively at a certain point. And I wonder if there's a way to evaluate that upon people trying to get reactivated.
Well, I think that in some ways what Dr. Bob was trying to address is that in the 10 years, if they retired when they're 65, 70, you know, I guess they're 75, I'm not sure how you monitor that in an emergency situation if you don't just put a year. I'm not sure how the medical field's doing that, because I know that they're asking, and even nurses, to come back. Does anybody have any thoughts other than Dr. Bob?
It's certainly a worthy consideration. However, we don't do that now if someone were to want to reactivate just in normal times. So I'm not sure that we'd want to go creating barriers. The object here is to minimize those. And I'm hoping that, just ethically speaking, our colleagues would only reactivate to help out if they knew that they were competent to do that. We've had some damn good psychologists in this town, former members of this board, who were practicing into their 80s, and did so because they were ethically aware of how they were functioning. So I would hope that, just under our basic ethics, somebody wouldn't apply for reactivation should they be having struggles cognitively.
This is Dr. Malott.
Dr. Malott.
Yeah, I agree with Dr. Bob. And Jim Form, and that, you know, where people attest to that, you know, and it's not maybe a question that they, that they don't have any conditions that will impede their practice. So they're attesting to that in the form.
All right. So is there a Are we feeling comfortable with the 10-year limit that Dr. Bob mentioned, or do we not want to have a limit? And
Madam Chairman, I believe that the 10-year limit would be quite liberal, and I think that'd be better be good.
Okay. Is there a motion then, Dr. Bob?
So moved.
I'm waiting for your motion. So then is there a motion to waive the fee, continue it, and waive the fee and continuing education for reactivated senior retired status licensee who have been retired for not more than 10 years to reactivate?
And those retirees will be in good standing and did not voluntarily surrender their license. We have had other individuals who have been revoked or surrendered seeking to come back under the emergency.
And it would also be just for the duration of the emergency that they have been reactivated.
So if they're in good standing, in good standing, did not have license revoked, and it's only for the state of emergency. Is there a second?
I second.
Dr. Flowers, second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Again, somewhat same topic regarding to voluntary inactive status licenses. Those who have gone inactive, do we want to do the same thing? Any thoughts or discussion on this? Do we want to waive their continuing education and fee for the time so they can practice them during the emergency?
Madam Chair, my own feeling.
Dr. Fenner.
Yes, I'm sorry. My own feeling is voluntary inactive, they can simply reactivate. There's a pretty simple procedure for that.
Okay, and then would we want to waive their fee and continue education credits just for the duration of the emergency, in case they don't have the credits, just for the emergency? I think we should. I don't.
That would be consistent with the others. Only these folks probably might be in better shape.
Yeah. All right. So is there a motion? Are there any motion or concerns? All right. Then I'll make a motion that we waive the fee and continue education credit for reactivating voluntary inactive status licensees for the duration of the state of emergency.
Second the motion?
Yeah.
I second.
Okay, we have a motion, second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, item G, authorize executive director to approve continuing education deadline extension request. Executive director, did you want to say a few words on this?
Yes, Madam Chair. We are receiving some requests to extend continuing education deadlines. This is mostly precipitated from licensees who had registered for and intended to attend live synchronous learning opportunities that have been canceled, and they would still like to attend those events should they be rescheduled, but because they were counting on those events to acquire the required number of units, now they are that option has been removed. Of course, we need to acknowledge there are other learning opportunities that can be accessed online and so forth, but we are receiving inquiries, and that's why it's on the agenda.
All right, thank you.
Dr. Malott. Yeah, I think as we get those applications in, and if they are missing a few hours, they probably need to attach an explanation. And then we could give them the same amount of time, you know, at least maybe 3 months past the when this state of emergency is lifted. So so that way they have time, because between now and the end of the emergency, they're not going to be able to do for many cases. And you know, and people are also extremely busy, and everything has changed, including online access and all of that. So we give them at least 3 months beyond the state of the emergency to meet the remainder of their CE units, which will not count towards the next licensing period. So we can go ahead, reactivate their license, allow, and if they are missing hours, they have up to 3 months beyond the time of the emergency to complete those hours, which will not count towards the next period.
All right, thank you. Any comments or thoughts? All right, do we need a motion or? That's your motion. All right, to allow a 3 month extension beyond the state of emergency, that would count, those credits would count for whatever application they're putting in currently. That's a motion. Is there a second?
I second.
We have a Dr. Flowers second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Item 4 is very similar to item 3, except if the focus is on the requirements of behavior analyst licensure. Again, we're talking about the authority of the Arizona Department of Health Services to make some changes due to the state of emergency. The first item is an extension of the 20-day licensure exemption. We discussed that in regards to psychologists. Any thoughts on how it should be handled for behavior analysts?
We should just mirror what we're doing for the psychologists in terms of A.
I would agree with that.
And again, I would just say that I think the same holds true for C, D, E, and F. The one issue I would just say in terms of the establishing license, the piece that would be different for our executive director would be there are some states without state licensure, so she would need to pull from the national certification board to verify that they are in good standing there prior to providing a temporary license. But other than that, I believe that we should as closely align with the psychologist as possible for these items, as well as the rest of the items up for discussion today.
All right. So my only concern or what I would disagree with is item E, suspend continuing education credits for renewal. I don't think actually after looking at that we can do that. Those continuing education credits are available online. And we were only allowed to suspend them if they're not available online. So I think actually item E doesn't pertain to something we could actually do. But I do agree with the rest of the items. Do we need an individual vote on each item, or can we vote to mirror what we did with the psychologist?
You could go ahead and vote to mirror what you did with the psychologist.
Madam Chair, I'll make that motion. I would just ask one thing. For the discussion we had around suspend continuing education requirements under F for the psychologists, I think the numbers are just aligned. We may not be able to move towards that same conclusion as we did for the psychologist for E and the behavior analyst.
Yeah, and giving them the 3 extra months. Yeah, you're right.
That would be this is Dr. Davey. I would like to make a motion that the items A, B, C, D, E that are up for consideration under number 4 mirror the decisions that were made for psychologists in the corresponding sections related to number 3. Ms. Gavin, I know you're going to clean that up for me.
May I ask a point of clarification?
Yes.
Dr. Davey pointed out, the only difference would be that in states that do not offer licensure, the VA that is coming from that state, that we are using BCBA certification active and in good standing in lieu of a license. Is that correct?
That was my suggestion.
I think we can only extend the license for people who are licensed in other states, because to extend it to people who are just certified, I don't know, I'm just struggling with that a little bit, because if this person is licensed, then fine, you know, but if they're certified, they're not practicing at the independent level in their state. So to then allow them to get a temporary license.
Yes, Kathy.
Oh, this is Dr. David Wilson, and I...
Oh, good.
Yeah. Dr. Davis Wilson, I'm sorry. That's okay. And I did not, I apologize, Dr. Malat, I did not mean to cut you off. I think the concern is I would agree with the license level in the states that have licensing, but some of the states, in fact, many of the states with the highest population of behavior analysts don't license their behavior analysts. And so the challenge becomes because the larger states don't have licensing, we're looking at a large pool of individuals that would just not be eligible for this at all, because there's just not a licensing option. I think that at the certification level, this is the same thing that we run into with the supervision standards, where if the state is, you know, New York or New Mexico or what have you that has licensure, then we honor, you know, the state licensure piece. But if the state is like California, where licensure, they have been unable to get licensure passed, and I believe we have licensure in 32 states right now, that, you know, excludes all of the other states and participants from those states being able to serve the public if necessary.
Yeah, this is Dr. Davey. I would just echo Diana's point that right now less than 24 states in the country have licensure. And I would point out that the 24 states, including Arizona, that have licensure are essentially hitting or obtaining your certification, which then produces the criteria to be able to gain licensure in almost every single state. The differences would be a state like Nevada that perhaps has a Judas Prudence exam on top of becoming a BCBA. And so from my standpoint, I think that the certification is an independent status, practicing independent. They are master's level clinicians that have passed a national certification exam. They have gone through all supervision requirements. And I think during this particular period in time that if we are looking to be able to get some help from California, for example, we would have to be able to accept the certification. California has no licensure in place. So I understand where Dr. Malat's coming from, but I do not share those concerns.
Okay, I'm fine. Right. Thank you.
Yeah, I feel comfortable since, you know, our board members who are behavior analysts feel comfortable with it. So we have a motion then to mirror the how we handle the psychologist in Section 3 to do the same with Section 4. And I know we had a motion. Was there a second?
I second.
Thank you, Dr. Flowers. So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. This is Dr. Davis Wilson. I just wanted to clarify that we are going to mirror everything except B, and that's specific to, because when I read the statute, it does say licensed in another state, and so I want to make sure that that we are crafting language for the purpose of this state of emergency, that we would also, that'd be specific to states that have licensure, that we wouldn't be, I don't want to get hung up on the language if we're trying to ensure that those other states that have, you know, high populations of BCBAs that may be looking to do some telehealth or some additional work. That'd be the only point of clarification.
So that whether they're licensed or not, as long as they're certified, if they're not licensed in a state that requires license, if they're in a different state, as long as they have the certification, they should be able to practice. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay. So just as a friendly, I guess, amendment or clarification to the motion, does that work with who made the motion?
This is Dr. Dave.
This is Dr.
That was my suggestion. Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Davies made a motion. Dr. Flowers seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Now moving to item 5 regarding requirements for psychologist supervision of licensure applicants. Executive Director, would you like to introduce this?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This matter is on the agenda to allow the board to consider granting some accommodations, if you will, for purposes of assisting applicants to meet their internship requirements, their pre-internship supervision requirements, and their supervised postdoctoral experiences requirements, given that there are some there's prescriptive language in terms of how that supervision needs to be provided, direct supervision, time, with the supervisor. I think we need to rely to a significant degree on the expertise of Dr. Malott and Dr. Meyer to inform us of these items. We are getting inquiries from students who are concerned that the policies requiring them to stay at home and so forth limit their ability to fulfill these requirements.
All right, thank you. So the first item Dr. Bob.
This is affecting not so much the students in school, but the students who are finished with their schoolwork and doing internship and postdoc hours. In the vast majority of situations, individual supervision and the like has switched to telemed type bases, media bases. COA, APA, ASPPB has already come out with a joint statement, so along with APIC, allowing for that supervision to occur over media, over telemed, and that is not to affect the language that we had required before. So I think our motion has most directly to do with those of us in the field who are supervising these intern applicants, that we not be restricted by the percentage in our law saying that their face-to-face supervision is only going to count if it's face-to-face with only 25% telemed, that we're going to count all telemed as appropriate level of supervision and not hold to that 25% rule.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
Yes, so Madam Chair, I guess that could also be for the duration of the emergency.
Yes. Yeah.
And possibly some months after that, I'm not sure how that would, if that's needed as well, because there may be a transition period.
Yeah.
I think that's a
This might come to haunt us years from now. If somebody decides to apply for a license, say 5 years from now. So basically, anyone who has completed a supervised experience during this time period, that modification, that requirement that we have to go back into effect will apply. So it's a little different situation. So if you accumulated supervised experience hours in any of the three categories during the time period of emergency, this waiver will apply. So if I wait for 4 years to apply for a license, but I did my internship this year, it should apply even if I come back in 4 years to get my license. So that's something we have to keep in mind.
I would agree with that. Any other comments? So is there a motion?
Maybe we should throw in the residency thing in here, too, if we can.
I would craft a motion that would say something like, I move that we suspend the limitation on telesupervision for those students receiving...
And telepractice.
For those candidates receiving supervision during the state of emergency and the 3-month period following that.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
I'll second it, but I do want to make a modification. I think it has to go beyond telesupervision. It has to go into telepractice, too, because we do have a limit on the amount of hours of telepractice. So, and that this exemption is basically permanent for this time period, you know, if somebody did submit hours.
Okay, so Dr. Bob, do you accept the amendment of telepractice?
Yes.
All right, and Dr. Flowers?
Yes, my second still stands.
Okay, perfect. All right, so any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Now we move on to item 6, which is somewhat the same regarding behavior analysts and their supervision. Any discussion on these items together or separately? Maybe Dr. Davis Wilson or Dr. Myers? Sorry. Bob?
I mean, I think, again, I'll wait to hear what Dr. Davis Wilson has to say, but I think, again, we want to mirror our friends and psychologists as closely as possible in this.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Dr. Davy, we don't have any prescriptive exclusions or prescriptive, like, telehealth or telesupervision type restrictions in our supervision. The only thing, so these three as defined are direct based from longstanding board requirements from the national board. And so I think... the only difference between these three at a national board level is that if you had the if you had A, then you did 1,500 hours. If you had B, then you did 1,000 hours. If you had C, you did 750 hours. Historically, the amount of hours hasn't been something that the board has been comfortable with any modifications of. And so, as it stands now, even though all three of these may have different criteria for supervision, we still require the 1,500. And so if we get an applicant that did, let's say, course B, where they did the university practicum, as it stands today, we tell them they have to go back and get an additional 500 hours. And they don't have to do that under A. They could go do their or under B. They could go do their additional 500 hours under A, so that they have a total of 1,500 hours. So the only thing really that that could be discussed, and I would be open to feedback, would be if there's any ability to say, hey, for this period of time, we may choose to accept these standards with the less than 1,500 hours. But otherwise, as it stands, these are longstanding standards with the National Board, and I don't think that there's anything that, aside from that 15-hour part, that would require modification or need modification to enhance or improve access to qualified clinicians.
Do you allow for telepractice or for, you know, supervision over, like, media, you know, being able to do it over the computer?
It's allowable at 100%. So if somebody were to do remote supervision entirely, that is allowable.
So is there a need to even do anything here then? Is there a need to even change it since that's not an issue? The distancing is not an issue?
I honestly don't think there's anything that needs to be changed.
Okay.
I agree with Dr. Davis.
All right. So hearing that, then we
Do we need a motion on any, or do we just move forward, Ms. Galvin? Are we all in agreement that there's no changes to be made? Do we need to make a motion?
No,
or just
move forward? No. Okay. Just take no action.
All right. Do I need a vote on that?
No.
Okay. All right. So unless I hear differently, we're not going to take any action on item number 6. All right. Item 7, discussion, consideration, possible action concerning temporary delegation to the executive director of request for time extensions to take the ECCC in accordance to statute. Ms. Executive Director, would you like to say a few words about this?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I think Dr. Bohansky already identified this issue earlier in the discussion, but with the closure of the testing centers through at least April 16th, and I think we can anticipate that date is likely to be pushed even farther into the future, this will impact the time frame for some candidates who will run up against the deadline before they are permitted to test. So we're requesting the delegation to me to extend that out for whatever period of time that you decide to allow them to test once the centers are safe to open.
Thank you. Any discussion?
We've already done that.
Okay. So is there any need to, I guess, do we need a motion to approve this request to delegate to the executive director? All right. We have a motion. Is there a second?
A second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Item 8, discussion, consideration, and possible action concerning developing frequently asked questions, guidance, or policy on the subject of telepractice. Mrs. Executive Director?
Certainly, Madam Chair. We are receiving a number of inquiries on this topic as well, and so what we've prepared is just a compilation of the statutes and administrative rules of which we are aware that address telepractice, and we posted it on our website. If that is in the board's determination, if that resource is sufficient to provide the kinds of guidance that the interested individual stakeholders would be interested in, then we can leave that resource as is. If we feel that we need to provide additional guidance relative to telepractice, and I would ask to identify a member or two of this board to collaborate with me to develop something that would be useful.
Have you found that what we have now is useful, or are people asking for additional information that we don't have?
Madam Chair, to this point in time, we haven't received really much feedback. It hasn't been on the website terribly long. I think we posted it in the middle of last week. When I directed individuals to this material, they haven't circled back to me with any additional questions. I think that there may be, though, one piece that I might add, and that is the definition of day. Day as it relates to the exemptions from licensure statute. So ARS 322075 refers to days, and there is a rule that, as we've discussed, defines what day means in that context. I think that might be the only other addition to this resource, and I can certainly do that.
Dr. Myers. So could we also add the temporary, well, I guess we need to add any information about the changes we've been discussing and making today.
Yes, Dr. Meyer, Madam Chair, if I may. The I believe that the procedure that we will follow immediately after this meeting is to notify the governor's office and the Department of Health of the series of decisions that you made, wait to receive their response, and whatever that response consists of, post that information on our homepage.
Okay. And then did we not change the percentage of supervision from 50% to 25% for telesupervision?
Yeah, we are changing that.
The percentage is 50% for telehealth in the statute.
We suspended it.
Right, yes. But I thought, didn't in a today. Previous board meeting, didn't we discuss changing that to 25%?
No, we used to be 25%, but we changed it to 50.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
Okay, so I guess there's no action needed. We, in regards to item 8, they will add the decisions that we made today that are approved by the Department of Health. So I guess if, as you look at our website, if you see anything that you think needs to be added to the information regarding telepractice, then just contact the executive director and we can, I guess, modify that. All right, moving to item number. Yes, Dr. Malott.
Regarding all of these different decisions, once we get approval from the governor's office, and I'm not, in light of since we're all agenda, I'm wondering how we're going to communicate these decisions.
Executive Director, your thoughts on that?
Sure, Madam Chair. By way of clarification, Dr. Malott, are you asking about communication to stakeholders or communication to this board relative to, reporting on, the implementation of these decisions?
Yeah, it's more the stakeholders.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Malott, for clarifying. We have invited representatives of the professional associations to be on this call. I believe they are here, so they could certainly take this information back to their respective organizations. Our homepage will, of course, be a primary resource. The staff will be prepared to field, I'm sure, a lot of questions from interested individual stakeholders and provide them with the material and resources they need. It's possible that there will be sort of a central clearinghouse of these kinds of decisions and accommodations, if you will. It may be that it is facilitated by Department of Health Services. I don't know that. But, of course, I'll stay as informed as I can about any of those kinds of resources developing.
Okay, thank you.
Just a quick point of clarification. Telepractice also includes audio or phone supervision?
Okay, thank you. Any other comments on item number 8? Hello?
This is Dr. Gill. Did you hear what I said? I believe it's written here, but I just want to clarify, telepractice supervision includes audio or phone practice as well as video.
That is correct.
That is correct. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. No other comments on item 8. We're moving to item 9. Discussion, consideration, and possible action concerning grants and provisional licenses to qualified individuals pursuant to Executive Order 2020-17, continuing of work. This executive order will allow those that have completed everything but the EPPP, in our situation, to allow them to receive a provisional license that's valid for 6 months. The provisional license will be suspended 20 days after the in-person testing centers reopen. or otherwise become available. So this is what they're requesting. Any thoughts or comments on this? And is it that, Ms. Galvin, this is pretty much an executive order. We really don't have any, we're not motioning to approve it. It's just more of an information. Is that correct?
Well, I think Heidi is seeking permission to grant those licenses instead of having them come back to the board or to the committee to review and grant. Is that correct, Heidi?
Well, possibly, but I think that this process needs to be outlined and defined by the board, and I'm going to refer, Ms. Galvin, to your advice that you have provided to me, which is it does not seem that this executive order requires the board to depart from its normal procedure, its established procedure, in terms of applications presented to are forwarding them to the board, and then the board granting that license. So this just stipulates that the board is granting provisional licenses to anyone who meets the who otherwise meets the requirements of a license, but is unable to test at this time due to the closure of the testing centers.
Right. Does that include
anyone? Our temporary license does allow us to issue a license without passing the exam, but they have to have a postdoc supervision plan in place. I'm just wondering about that. Could we not just do the temporary license?
Madam Chair, Dr. Malott, this is Kathy. The temporary license does not allow them to practice independently. This provisional license would allow candidates to sit for the EPP that the board has already approved to sit and has approved for licensure upon a passing score. You would issue a provisional license for them to practice independently under this executive order. Gene, correct me if I'm wrong. That's my understanding.
That's my understanding, too. And it would also include, let's say, an individual for example, who has taken the EPP and didn't pass, they would be able to apply under this too. So as far as I read this situation, so whether if you haven't taken it or let's say that you had and you didn't pass the first time, you would be able to apply for this.
Did you get a statement on that?
I requested the answer to that question both Friday and yesterday, and I don't have a response to that from the governor's office.
Yeah, the tricky part with that, Dr. Malott, is that, so let's say the person failed. Well, the person applying who hasn't taken the test, we don't know if they would pass or fail either. I mean, it's an interesting quandary to be in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it came up yesterday at our application review committee. We had a number of, students who are reapplying for failure. So what this statute is saying, or this particular governor's executive order is saying, is that if a person applies and has met all of the requirements but the exam, that we go ahead and grant them a provisional license which allows them to practice independently, and basically they would have, really the clock would start, or the clock would restart when the 6 months, we've been using actually a much more generous, I'm trying to suggest a time limit.
Well, the provisional license is valid, according to the executive order, is valid for 6 months from the date it's issued. So if you issue me one today, it's good for 6 months. However, the provisional license will be suspended 20 days after the in-person testing center reopens. So it's good for 6 months, but if life goes back to normal and all the testing centers open, then it's suspended after 20 days.
The provisional license will go away and then they will go back to being in that status of they're given a certain amount of time. If I'm not mistaken, it's a period of 1 year to sit for the license. We probably need to talk about that because we don't want to just give them 20 days. If I apply today, I'm given a provisional license. I cannot do the exam, say, till September. But typically I would have gotten a whole year to complete that exam. So we kind of have to address that, what our current statute allows, plus this emergency period. But the provisional license would go away. But I don't want them to think that they have to do the exam within 20 days, because really they've had typically they would have had the whole year or 6 months. You know, I don't know if you get what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, well, the provisional, I think what you're saying is the provisional license the provisional license would go away, and whatever they were under prior to that would then kick back in.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Dr. Millett, I don't think this quite fully addresses your the questions that you're raising or the considerations that you're raising. Staff is discussing this with Ms. Galvin. I think we've arrived at the determination that it is incumbent upon the applicant to apply to, request issuance of the provisional license from the board. So in other words, we wouldn't just sort of, go through our database and identify everyone who meets this criteria and say, here, present them with a provisional license. There may be a substantial number of applicants for whom this doesn't really, they don't desire the provisional license. They don't want to pursue it. And as a practical matter, what value does a very short-term provisional license even afford them? Is this making sense?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Bob? This one's a slippery slope. We have a temporary license that they've renamed in this order, but we have a temporary license, and under that temporary license, we're assured the protection of the public because there's a supervision requirement or a training plan that's allowed or required, rather, to keep an eye on these folks. They're not independently practicing. If we act on this, what we're doing is taking that assurance out, and we're saying, and the largest group of people this would affect are those people who have failed the exam. We're saying, here, you haven't passed the national boards, but we're going to let you practice independently without supervision, without a training plan in, because there's not enough time for you to go and test. The only way I think we protect the public is to insist that there be a supervision plan attached to it, and that these people not be allowed to practice independently.
This is Jean Galvin. The Attorney General's office is not providing legal advice on how to interpret this executive order. And so I suggest that maybe, I know Heidi has tried over and over, but she may want to seek guidance from the governor's office about whether the executive order would contemplate the scenario just laid out by Dr. Bohansky, that individuals who applied for provisional license would have to do so under some sort of supervision plan.
So could we table this? We ask about it. We're meeting on Friday, and maybe talk about this on Friday and hope we get some kind of clarification. And if we were to apply, give us provisional, the paperwork would need to clearly say it's for 6 months and that it's provisional. And do they have, you know, I'm with Dr. Bob, it's a little concerning.
I'm happy to circle back to the governor's office with this additional question and indicate that we are hoping to get the guidance in time for our Friday board meeting.
Does that work for everybody if we table this? Any concerns or any more comments?
I think
all right, hearing, okay. Hearing none, then I'm going to go ahead and table this. Do we need a vote on that, Ms. Galvin?
No.
Okay. All right. Then I'm going to just, we'll go ahead and table this, and we'll discuss it then on Friday. That's the last item on our agenda. I just want to thank all the board members for...
I have another comment. This is Dr. Meyer.
Dr. Myers.
Back to Dr. Gill's question a few minutes ago about telepsychology also involving the phone. One of the issues I've seen that I've been trying to figure out is under R426-111, providing supervision through telepractice, it says supervision provided through telepractice is conducted using secure, confidential, real-time visual telecommunication technology. And so... That to me says that phone supervision does not work. However, it also says later that if it's audio only, you have to have a way of identifying the supervisee. So, how do other people interpret this?
I interpreted Dr. Gill's question as, are we including in this waiver an allowance that would allow telephonic supervision participation? That typically we don't allow that, and I am concerned about the security of just telephone alone. But that was my understanding of Dr. Gill's question that I made misinterpreted.
Dr. Gill, you want to clarify?
This is Dr. Gill. I was only asking. I was not making a statement of what my understanding is about what's stated here. I was asking for clarification. I wasn't making a statement of what I thought, you know, the law allows.
I thought you were requesting or inquiring whether the board's motion with respect to the waiver included or would allow just telephonic supervision.
Sure. Well, I thought it may already be in place in the law, but I would defer to others as to whether it is. Or not, but
Dr. Bob.
Dr. Bob.
One of the things I think when we made that motion that I referenced was the joint decision of ASPPD, ATIC, COA, APA, that they're encouraging all of us to allow maximum flexibility here. So where our law allows for a percentage of video supervision, telesupervision, we're now going to allow an unlimited amount of time there and add telephone.
So currently do we allow for telephone only?
Video only, presently.
Okay, but I thought what Dr. Meyer says is it does say audio only, but you need to identify the supervisor. Is that correct? I don't have that rule in front of me.
Well, I mean, it clearly says it has to be visual. Now I'm looking for the other. And so the written agreement with the supervisee. It says the manner in which the licensee will identify the supervisee before each supervisory session that does not involve video. And so that's what made it confusing, is that it's saying that...
Basically saying there's an opportunity for audio.
Yeah. So that, I'm wondering if we could also get clarification on that, that inconsistency.
All right, so can we put that on? I'm sorry, did I hear somebody want to speak?
No, go ahead. I think you're seeking some clarification maybe by Friday from Heidi and staff about the scope of the waiver that you approved earlier today with respect to telesupervision and teletherapy as it relates to the supervision and therapy requirements of an applicant.
Right, and Dr. Myers, are you referencing R-426? What was the citation of that again? I'm not sure I wrote it all down. R-4.
Just a second. Let me get back to it. Supervision is R-426-11.
Okay.
And under A, it says it has to be visual, but under D, it says how the supervisee will be identified before each supervisory session that does not involve video. So I guess I'm also asking if at the full board meeting we could have on the agenda to discuss what that means. I think that, as Dr. Bob said, the waiver currently under the emergency is to allow phone supervision only, but as we're putting out the reference material for telepsychology practice in general, I think this needs to be clarified as well.
All right, thank you. So, Executive Director, can we place this on the agenda then, too?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any other items for the agenda? Any more comments regarding today's agenda?
It's Dr. Meyer again.
Dr. Meyer.
At the very top of the psychologist rules in definitions, it does say that disaster is defined, and it says a situation for which the governor declares a state of emergency. And the board acknowledges any state of emergency declared by the governor or determined by the board. So just wanted to throw that out there. That's it. Thanks.
Oh, that's a very good catch.
That does offer clarification under whatever it is, 2075, so thank you.
Okay. Thank you for that. All right, so hearing no other items for the next meeting on Friday and no other comments regarding today, I'd like to first thank Ms. Galvin. Thank you so much. Staff, board staff, you guys were awesome. I mean, seriously, putting this together so quickly and keeping us abreast of what's going on. Thank you so much. Is there a motion to adjourn? What, no motion?
No.
Everyone to stay on? Okay, and a second?
Second.
Then we second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Hopefully there's no nays, and I will. We'll see everybody on Friday, or chat with everybody on Friday.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.